Let's get to the phone lines. We got some great questions. And Patrick actually brought in some great employee stories to
I gave you a little homework to do, John.
You did. I didn't read it yet, so I'll have to do those during the commercial.
You mean during the Hawks game? You weren't reading what I sent you? I'm disappointed.
Let's go to Linda. Linda's on WGN. Hello, Linda.
Hey there.
How are you? What's going on?
I have an employee that quit on February 8th, and we get 2 weeks of paid vacation, which is earned and accrued. He took one day in January. He's asking for the rest of his vacation pay.
Like the 13 days,
like
you say?
He's had enough. Well, it's 2 weeks vacation pay, so
it's 10 days.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
10 days, right? 10 working days.
Right.
But he already had one day in January.
Do you guys roll over days from one year to the next?
No, we do not.
Okay, go ahead.
So, no, I was going to ask if you accrue everything on January 1st, or is it prorated by month or by week or something?
It's ambiguous. It just says earned and accrued.
Okay, well, it totally depends on how a company allows employees to accrue. If they don't have a written policy, then it should be a practice. How is it accrued? Oftentimes, it's by hour worked or by month, something prorated throughout the year. Most companies do not allow an entire year's vacation to accrue on the first of the year. So if it doesn't say anything,
right,
then we're going to have to focus on what the company's practice is. If it has no practice, when I mean practice, I mean when someone leaves, like February, March, April, how much vacation is paid out? Does the company assume that employees get the whole thing at the beginning, or do they prorate it by hour worked, by week, by month, something like that? And that's the amount that's actually earned at the time they leave. Then they get that, have to get that with their final paycheck. So I, you know, if the policy doesn't say anything, then we have to go by what the company's practice is.
Right. And Linda, is it tracked? Like, does each employee have like some sort of portal in which
ADP too,
or something,
right,
on the paycheck? Like, is it marked on there?
Yes, it is tracked. Yes, and it shows that he had one vacation day, and we give, you know, 10 days for a year, and it's for the entire year. So
yeah,
at the end of 2024, he should have taken 10 days. So
yeah,
it's almost one every other month. Or,
so,
you know,
so, sort of right.
Month.
So, I would focus on what John mentioned. What does it look like in the pay stub in the ADP payroll documents? Because that will show, that's good evidence of how much an employee accrues in terms of vacation time per each paycheck. Then when he leaves, look at that. And if there's amount left over after he's taken it, what, you know, whatever he took, then that's what must be paid out when with his final paycheck.
But I think that if it only showed one day on the paycheck and he used it in January,
it,
then I don't think you owe anything.
Yeah, unless
maybe 0.1 or 0.2 hours or something.
Maybe. Probably not, yeah, frankly.
Okay. But, does that answer your question, okay, Linda?
All right. It does. Thank you.
All right.
Sure.
Let's go to Chris. Chris, you're on WGN. How are you doing, my friend? Sounds like you had a bad week, huh?
Yeah, I did.
I'm sorry.
I have worked for this small company for 28 years, and I was let go yesterday.
Oh, I'm sorry, Chris.
What was the reason the company gave you for being let go?
Technology has passed me by.
Whoa. That's a red flag for me, Patrick Dolan.
No, it is, and it depends on the job, what the job requires, you know, what Chris's job requires, and frankly, you know, can she go through some training? I don't understand why, you know, suddenly she's unqualified to do the job because, quote, technology's passed her by. That's a red flag for age discrimination.
Did they write anything down in paper or in an email? Did you get any letters?
I have two letters, and they were from an attorney, and they were just copy and pasted, because at the top of the one letter, you can see where it says village, and then in the other part, the second letter I got yesterday, it says my name, employee of the village.
Okay.
Whoa. So, don't tell us which village, but what was your position?
Office work,
okay.
Computer work.
Okay. Did the letter mention anything specific, or did anybody at the village tell you something specific with regard to which technology?
I didn't work for a village.
Oh, so the copy-paste was from some other letter had been used for a different... So someone did something sloppy with the copy and I see what you're saying, Chris.
I do too. Sorry.
So,
yes.
All right, did anyone verbally say, literally, like, technology has gone by? Like, Like when they fired you, what did they say? What did they actually tell you?
He gave me a letter yesterday and said, you're done.
So did they give you any separation money or ask you to sign a release of claims?
Oh, they've asked me to sign stuff, but I'm going to go to a lawyer.
Heck yeah, you're going to go to Patrick Dolan.
Yeah,
you're going to go.
Yeah, you could reach out to me on Monday. John will give you the number.
Yeah.
Because it's on his arm.
Yes, exactly. You got to call Patrick. Yeah. If they, first of all, were sloppy enough to be copying and pasting or using ChatGPT to write some letter to you.
Right.
And if you think it's because of age discrimination, essentially, which could be
for sure
a case.
Yep.
Right. I'll be 65 in March.
Okay.
And my son knows the family very well after 28 years.
Yeah.
He made a phone call and they just weren't very nice to him.
I'm sorry to hear that.
That's unfortunate. Give me a call on Monday and let's talk through those issues. If you want to.
I don't know if you're driving right now, Chris, but it's 312-33.
Wait.
Okay, that's fine.
I just pulled over.
Okay, good. You're being safe.
Good.
That's important.
That's great.
I heard those sirens go by. Yep, 312-332-7800.
Yeah, because I live out in the boondocks.
That's okay.
You're downtown.
Yeah. We give me a call.
Patrick loves the boondocks.
Yeah, I love it.
It's all good.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
People call me from everywhere.
Sorry that you got laid off, Chris. Oh. And he'll help you out, at least talk through your situation, okay?
All right. And I'm sure I'll do a conference call with my son.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
Loop someone else, and that's always good.
Let's all three times.
And then give us an update, okay, Chris, in a couple weeks, all right?
All right. I can do that. And
good luck, okay? Sorry about that.
Well, thank you very much.
Take care of yourself.
I was hoping to get to 66.
You're almost.
Social Security.
Yeah. Don't worry, Chris. It'll all work out. All right, Chris will call you on Monday. I mean, that happens sometimes, right? That age discrimination thing. How do you deal with that technology thing? Like, could a company, if you legitimately have been trained and you just can't keep up, is that grounds for termination? Or are they required to maybe try and move you to another position or what?
It can be grounds for termination. The question is, though, was the older employee afforded the same sort of training and opportunity to become technologically sound like the other employees? So it really depends on how this person was treated. You know, just because they're older and they didn't sort of grow up maybe with the same technology does not mean you can't be trained to do the same thing younger folks maybe already know how to do. So the question is, was she treated differently?
Mm-hmm.
That's the question.
312-981-7200 is our phone number. Got a good text on the 847, a follow-up to the woman who I think was the employer, talking about her employee wanting full pay for 2 weeks, even though he had used a day in January and accrued essentially a day. It's February. The 847 says, but what if he took a two-week vacation on January 5th? Like he took it right at the start of the year. And that does raise a hairy question because some companies will let you go into negative accrual, assuming that you, by the end of the year, then you're back to square zero. So I guess I have a two-part question.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, let's say you leave a company, you took a two-week vacation, you went into negative. Can that company take that off your last paycheck?
Yeah, but yes, they can, but they need your written permission to do so. So they do. So in order to deduct something from someone's paycheck.
Like the final paycheck they sent
you. Final paycheck, right. Company literally has to have at that time, not a policy you signed a long time ago, something that says you consent to this deduction from this paycheck. That's an Illinois law. A little bit strange, but at contemporaneous, at the same time, you have to agree in writing to do that. Now, that happens, you know, pretty often that someone leaves and you're negative. Most companies, frankly, don't do anything about it because it was their choice to allow you to take vacation, even though you didn't have it earned or in the bank, right? Some companies are not. Some companies are not like that. They want their money back. And so they will press that issue. And, you know.
Do you have to sign it?
I try to get them out of it.
Do you have to sign it?
Do you have to sign it? No, you don't have to sign it. And then technically the employer is not permitted to take that out of your paycheck. But then they can pursue you for that, believe it or not. Do most companies do that, like a lawsuit? No, because they're usually not talking about very much money. It's not great practice either to sue your employees or former employees.
Well,
so they don't really do that in practice.
Right, because that wouldn't make any sense. Like, I'd be like, hey, company, you're the one that let me take that vacation into negative.
I know.
Thank you for doing that, by the way.
That's what I say.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
I know. But there's a lot of back and forth on that issue.
312-981-7200 if you have any questions for Patrick Dolan. I'm sure you do. Hopefully you're not like Chris, who just got laid off yesterday. But Patrick, that's what happens.
It does.
People want to know in those moments.
Yeah.
They're very vulnerable in those moments,
yeah,
right? They've just been
stressful.
Laid off 28
yeah.
years, Chris.
And they don't know what to do. And they don't know why it happened. Or, you know, they have strong suspicions that something happened illegally. Or they want to know if it's illegal. And it's all very stressful and confusing for a lot of folks.
We've talked about age discrimination for over 40. Apparently in some states, someone in Gen Z can sue for age discrimination. We'll get to that after the news on WGN. We've talked many times on the show, in fact, earlier with a caller, about age discrimination over the age of 40. Apparently, Gen Z might be bringing some bias claims in some states.
This is unusual for sure. So let's set the legal standard here. Under federal law, Age Discrimination and Employment Act, those over 40 are protected from discrimination, harassment, and retaliation. Normally, that you see that when someone younger than 40 is treated better in the, any sort of term or condition of a job, right? So you're always comparing. When I talk to folks, I always ask, are you over 40? Is the person who got the job instead of you or treated better than you or something like that under 40? That's always those are always the first questions. Now what we have in some states, only like a couple of states, it's New Jersey, New York, and Florida, and also maybe also in New York City, we have some laws that protect discrimination on the basis of age, no matter what your age is. And so that, you know, that makes a lot of intuitive sense. If you're going to protect folks from discrimination based on age, why is there that line 40?
Why 40?
Yeah, and I think
because someone 39
right,
might
exactly.
say, I'm feeling the same thing, but I can't file a claim until I'm 40. Or
right.
It has to have happened when
right.
I'm 40.
And also, what if someone's like 65 or 70 or something like that, and the person is 40, for example, or 41, 42? That seems, you know, could also be a discrimination, but
oh, so what you're
really
saying
work?
Is the person who's 67 and the person that got the job is 41, now they don't qualify because person's quote-unquote old, even though they're 26 years younger.
Yeah, that's true, and I was just saying, that's true in most jurisdictions. There is some law, not most of the law, where it says that person still has a claim because of the disparity. Normally, that's not the case.
Okay.
The person has to be under 40. So this is... This, I think, makes a lot of logical sense. And, you know, the trend right now for a lot of jobs is actually going toward older workers. So Gen Z folks who are coming into the workforce, a lot of older workers who are doing the hiring, you know, maybe don't like some of their attitude or work ethic or whatever it is. And so now they're looking for older, more experienced workers. So this law protecting folks in their 20s and 30s, I think, is a result of that. And I think what we're going to see in a lot more states are laws like this that protect people from age discrimination, no matter what the age is.
Okay, hold on.
Okay.
Let's say you are doing an interview with someone or you talk to their previous employer and they have bad work ethic. You can not hire them because of that, right?
Of course.
But what you're suggesting is if there's a company-wide or a management-wide bias where they don't even consider people of a certain age or they inherently believe they are a certain way because of their age, that's where you get into, in these states, potential illegal behavior.
Absolutely. And so what they're doing is not hiring, not interviewing, not properly considering folks in their 20s and 30s because of some of these things that they assume they are like. You know, maybe the HR folks have read, oh, you know, that's a bad attitude. I read about your, you know, bad attitude, something like that. And so that's what is becoming an issue, and that's what the law seeks to protect.
Yeah, that's interesting. I can already hear the eye rolls. Yes, I can hear them of some of our listeners saying, absolutely, do not hire Gen Z, blah, blah, blah. But no, companies should at least engage or at least consider all applicants in a fair and unbalanced way before they at least get to the stages of interviewing them, right?
Yeah, and it's tough because sometimes they're not hired because, you know, the hiring folks will think, well, they're just going to be gone in 2 years, or, you know, they're not going to want to come into the office, or, you know, they don't have sort of the social skills, inter-office social skills, because they've only worked remotely or they're so used to being on their phone. All of those biases can lead toward age discrimination.
Mm.
So in the effect, just like you said, it's the effect of all this stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll admit that even when we talk on this station, sometimes we loop and lump groups of people together for stories. We do it all the time, right? Like Gen Z isn't as good at this as Gen X is, or vice versa.
Right.
And the danger with that is, even if studies show, you know, that some of that is true, et cetera, is we just need to remind ourselves and our listeners too that that's not everybody. There are very dedicated, good in-person Gen Zers, Gen Alpha soon, that are capable of doing jobs too.
And the problem, of course, and the problem is a lot of HR hiring managers are reading the same stuff we all are. So,
right.
So they get this information and think, you know, I don't want that person in my company. I don't want that sort of attitude, that sort of entitlement that I'm reading about in this article in my workplace, because it's not healthy for this and this or that reason. So then the bias comes in, and that's where the discrimination comes out.
Right. All right, let's pivot to talk about non-competes. We've talked about it here in Illinois. We have different thresholds than other states. A lot of people are hanging their hat on the idea that the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, will ban non-competes. You have kind of talked about on the show that this is a process that could take a while, if ever, right? What's the newest reporting on it?
Yeah, so the FTC, I think, is about to pass a proposal to ban non-competes, and that is going to trigger a whole bunch of responses, both in terms of litigation, saying the FTC does not have the power to actually ban non-competes, and it's also going to spark a whole bunch of pushback because of its sweeping nature, unlike a lot of states, Illinois included, which ban non-competes based on how much you make or what you do, whether you're an executive or a lower level hourly employee. This proposed ban does not do those things. It says non-competes are invalid, period. I don't think, after it's all said and done, that sweeping ban is going to ultimately take effect. I don't think so. We have a long way to go from here to there, but we should watch what the FTC is doing, because that's the initial proposal that I think will be passed.
This is interesting, because this gets into a world of a giant Supreme Court decision that is going to come down in June that allows agencies like the FTC, like the FDA, like others, to have deference to interpret law and fill in the gaps of law, meaning obviously, Congress writes laws and decides what the laws are, but they can't anticipate every outcome. There are so many detailed options that Congress can't possibly write a law for every little thing. So they, for years, the rule of the law, Chevron deference, a famous Supreme Court case going back to the 80s, allows the agencies then to kind of fill in the gaps. The FTC can fill in the gaps with some of these rules and regulations, the FDA, all the sorts of things. There's a massive case that already had oral arguments and seems to indicate that the Supreme Court is ready to kind of throw that Chevron deference, as they call it, out the window. That could play a role here too.
Yeah, and it probably will. And you know, all these issues are going to get litigated. And I think it won't, I think that it won't be lost on the FTC folks who are passing this ban ultimately, that that's not how states look at this. And it doesn't even seem to address the issue. Most protections afforded under non-compete are targeted at, I think rightly so, people who have, employees who have confidential, trade secret, proprietary information. You can't go to a competitor if you're sort of a high-level employee, because that harms our business for this or that reason, right? It's not typically the mid-level or the lower-level employees. What's the harm there for most people? They just, you know, the harm is not there. So I think what's ultimately going to happen is, if the FTC is allowed to pass a ban, you will see things like we have in Illinois. In Illinois, if you make less than $75,000 a year, you cannot be forced to abide by a non-compete. In other states, it goes by the level of employee, okay? If you're a higher earner, an executive or something like that, if you're in certain, you know, positions within the company, then you are bound by non-compete, but not otherwise.
Right. Yeah, employees hate non-compete clauses, but there seems to be some justification, and you can envision scenarios in which certain businesses with certain people feel like if there was freedom of movement just willy-nilly between companies, that that would create less than ideal workplace situations. You seem to be staring at me the other way.
No. Well, I just think a national ban's not going to happen because I think it would just cause incredible chaos. And, you know, companies already use things like non-disclosure agreements, confidentiality agreements, when folks are onboarded. So people, when they leave, cannot use that information, right?
So you think the business already has some protections
in
certain areas?
They do have some protections.
Without the non-compete.
Absolutely. And so in those sorts of agreements have consistently been upheld, okay? I mean, there's lots of state and federal laws that protect proprietary, trade secret, and confidential information, regardless of what the contract says with an individual employee. So what we're talking about here is safeguards that exist for that type of information. Now you're adding the non-compete. Who are you really concerned about? Most companies, I think, rightly so, should be concerned about folks at the higher levels who can harm the company if they go to a competitor and use that information.
312-981-7200. Boy, we got high end there. Me bringing up Chevron deference and everything.
We're back in a con law class.
Yeah, right. 312-981-7200. Any thoughts or problems you're having at work? Maybe you just got laid off. Maybe you just got hired. Maybe it's a good thing. And you're looking things over and you want any last pieces of advice before you sign on the dotted line. We'll do that after this on WGN. Patrick Dolan from Conti and Dolan Law to the right of me. Ooh. And Patrick, we're still getting calls already and working through those. But this has been kind of the new frontier, and maybe not new. I mean, this has been going on for a while. The idea of AI being a determiner of who gets, at least through screening processes or two interviews, through the hiring process. This is not new, but there are a lot of issues with this, aren't there?
Yeah, there are. And I think it's becoming more prevalent. And with AI, technology is more available to HR groups and you know, any sort of hiring agency as well, not just HR groups within an employer. But the issue is, of course, bias. Who is being screened out? Who is not being considered for the job because of the screening process?
And you might say, well, wait, no, AI is going to be non-biased. It's essentially a computer program that is just analyzing candidates and just kind of filtering it through. But it can be biased because it's pulling its information. It's essentially building its brain based on the practices of businesses for years and years and years.
That's right. And so what you get out is what you put in. That's what you're saying. And so that's a concern. And the issue is, if you're looking for certain colleges or certain types of jobs or certain companies, or frankly trying to pull from a specific geographic area, or just generally if you require a 4-year college degree for when it really shouldn't be necessary for a job. The whole question with hiring is this job related? Okay, are the candidates that you're trying to talk to about this job, are they the right ones for the job? And so you have to look at what the job requires. So there's a whole host of ways that qualified candidates can be taken out of that, job pool for reasons that, frankly, have nothing to do with whether they can do the job or not.
Right. Yeah, I've been reading some that the algorithms favor, like, people that have played lacrosse in the past.
There's a pretty famous one.
Right. Yeah. And what does playing lacrosse have to do with anything? But lacrosse is usually associated with a higher socioeconomic background.
Right.
And
white people.
Right. And that's where the bias is.
Yeah,
so it's not
exactly
the computer saying, I'm just going to weed out only white people can get this job, or people from upper middle class. But through looking deeper into people's resumes and CVs, they ping and detract different things and move them to the forefront.
And listen, I understand why you want programs to sift through people, because especially, in the last probably 5 or 10 years, it's so easy to apply to their jobs online. You know what I mean? And so these companies probably get thousands of applications for certain jobs or a small group of jobs. So they have to find a way, but there's inherent danger in using programs like we're talking about in trying to filter out these folks to see who's actually going to get interviewed.
Interesting. 224, before we let you go, Patrick, says, I work for an Illinois township. We don't even have an HR person. There's not much of a question there, more of a statement. But does that happen at small companies or small public institutions?
It happens a lot.
What do you do in situations?
Somebody within the organization or the company or the municipality has to be responsible for that. They may farm it out to an outside HR agency, but you still have to abide by the law. And so you still have to people responsible for the policies and practices and, you know, the legal requirements for every employer. And so if they, just because they don't have an HR person doesn't mean you get to get away with it. And if you have a complaint, maybe it has to go to the boss or something like that if there's no HR person. So it doesn't, I think it's much more difficult because those employers tend not to follow the law very well.
Interesting. And like, this person mentions the township, but I can definitely see a small business. Someone runs a restaurant. It's you as the owner, or you run a little shop. You don't have the money to pay for an HR person, so you outsource some of it. But those HR responsibilities of delegating tasks or, you know, making sure the workplace is in compliance is still on you, right?
Right. And I get a lot of calls from small businesses because they can't afford a full-time HR person. And they're like, can you help me with this policy or this handbook? Or can you just help me with this employee relations issue? It's an FMLA issue. How do I handle it? So I or people like me, become the sources for that help with, you know, for small businesses. Happens a lot.
All right, Patrick, how can people reach you?
312-332-7800.
Why should they reach you?
So anything with regard to workplace issue, hiring, firing, compensation, non-compete question, a question about equity, if you have that in your agreement, happy to help.
I cut you off when you said or. You gave your phone number.
Oh, yeah, I was going to give my email address, pdolan@contidolanlaw.com.
pdolan@contidolanlaw.com, C-O-N-T-I, D-O-L-A-N.
Your colleague, Karen Conti.
The wonderful Karen Conti.
Yeah, my law partner, your colleague.
Yes, for sure. Great to chat with you again.
Thanks, good to be here. Thanks, Iridian.
We'll talk to you soon. Oh, that was nice of him. Oh. Thank you, producer Iridian.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Sometimes I even forget to do that, and she's the best.
Well, I always try to do it.